emotional, transforming, musical, linguistic object. Help machines.
Greetings from Cyberdelic Space. I'm Lorenzo, and I'm your host here in the Psychedelic Salon. Well, today's presentation is one I think you're going to enjoy. It's a talk that Alex Gray gave in Jamaica at the Mind States Conference in 2002. And in this presentation, Alex describes his progression from a young artist in search of a vision to the man we know and love today and whose work just blows everybody away who sees it. The talk Alex gives here was actually accompanied by a lot of visual images. Unfortunately, I don't have copies of them to put on our own website to go along with this talk, but the good news is that you can see, I think, every one of the images he talks about on Alex's own website, which is alexgrey.com, alexgrey.com. And while you're at it, you also ought to check out his wife Allison's website, where she has also a lot of very interesting art, and that's allysongrey.com. You know, maybe someday we'll be able to do a video podcast and add some of these images into the more mobile world, but if you have a chance at all to sit at the computer while you listen to Alex's talk, go out to his website and follow through with looking at the images. Now, there's a few places that I had to cut out descriptions that made really little sense to the painting he was referring to without actually having it before you, and I just cut those out because I think most of the talk will even stand on its own without seeing the images. But there weren't too many of those things I had to cut out. By the way, if you were actually at this presentation in Jamaica, you'll realize that I also deleted a good bit of the discussions that took place about the flaky slide projector that they had there. You know, it just wasn't working right. And I thought about leaving some of the funnier comments in, like one where I heard John Hanna say, "Now we're totally screwed." But John and his troops came through, and they did get the slide projectors going again. But my better judgment actually prevailed about putting some of that stuff in. Actually, it was about 5 minutes of screwing with the projector, and it's quite funny. I guess at least if you're in a Jamaica state of mind, it's quite funny. But without any further ado, let me get out of the way here and let you hear Alex Gray talk about his vision and his life as an artist.
I'm just going to launch into this, this slideshow is going to talk about sort of the full span of my work from like the earliest stuff, some of the earliest stuff here. This was like 5 years old, you know. I'm sorry, you know. But my mom, I went home one time, you know, Thanksgiving or something. She pulls out a box and says, "Listen, here's like a lot of your old stuff, you know." And I found some amazing treasures in that box. And among them was this, I think she said I was around 5 years old when I did this little watercolor of a skeleton, you know, and I'm still painting skeletons, which is the really weird thing. And this is, 5 years later, I was 10 years old and still dealing with the same subject, mortality, the Grim Reaper, things like that. And then 5 years further, this was a self-portrait that I remembered. I still remember doing this, and it was kind of like my commitment to being an artist. And I did it in one evening, and it was, I felt, you can tell, you know, there's this kind of arrogance, you know, it's like, you know, cocky, like, "Hey, I'm pretty good," you know, like, looking at that look in the, in the mirror, you know, that every artist kind of needs, you know, just to get them going. But then by the next year, it had all kind of deflated. And, it's like the weight of the existential anxiety of the world had sort of was bearing down, and things were getting more confusing. Next year, I think I was 17 and did this self-portrait, and this was interesting. I just like look back at it and I say, okay, so here I'm kind of looking down at my body, that's lying in state, you know, kind of dead guy, and then here's a fetus that's connected with the hands that are there, and this hand is touching that point of connection between sort of birth and death. And this arm, I had not sort of discovered God yet, and so this was kind of arm wrestling with the praying hands. And so anyway, it was kind of predictive of whatever it was I was becoming. And this piece, this is a self-portrait from the next year. The work was starting to, this was, I guess, one of my first visions. And it was, of course, a kind of a morbid vision. And I had just broken up with my girlfriend, and I couldn't get any sleep. And I had this vision of myself tearing myself in half. And one half was kind of looking over toward the light, you know, and thinking, if I could just get rid of this asshole, you know, then it'd be okay, you know. The shadow, you know, that we've been learning about, we have to integrate. So this person hadn't learned that yet. And I was starting to see these themes come through my work, this kind of sense of polarities. This piece was called Secret Dog, and it was about an unfortunate situation where I accidentally hit a dog on the freeway, and then I pulled over and put it in the trunk. I called the owner, and they did not want it, and so I put it in a bag down by a river, and I went back every day and took photographs of it, and don't ask me why, but that's what I did. And in the end, I called the piece Secret Dog. And anyway, what I found out was that sanitation crew goes around and picks up these animals that are around on the highway. I was curious about what happens to them. And so I found out that they get taken to this rendering plant and ground up and into these things, you know, a kind of a defatted meat and bone meal, which goes into some dog foods, oddly enough. And then the fat, you know, which can go into hand soaps and paint, cosmetics, all kinds of things. I guess I was furthering this, these kind of themes of polarities, and I had this dream where half of my hair was shaved. This is back in 74, and so it kept haunting me whenever I'd look in the mirror, and so I decided to do it one day, and so I kept my hair half shaved for half a year, and I didn't know why, but then I came across Ornstein's research on the brain and about the hemispheres that are sort of somewhat logical and intuitive, the different hemispheres. And so I thought, well, it has to be about that. Maybe it's about that. So exploring these polarities, of course. So, John, maybe you can... All right. So I did different odd things, like this was a private billboard. You know, I would try to create these polarities, you know, private billboard. Yeah. So next. Private subway, you know? Okay. Anyway, so I kept going with this whole thing, the polarity thing. So, and this half head shaved, I went out and I handed out leaflets with my face on it, you know, and that invited people to be my friend. call me up sometime, we could have dinner together. Or throw this down and step on my face. So it was creating some kind of polarity situation. Anyway, a few people called, and once they learned that I was a poor artist and wasn't going to be taking them out to dinner, but we'd be sharing the bill, just declined. And a few people did step on the face. So, but let's see if we're going to continue the curse of the carousel. Well, okay. Yep, everyone is a real gift. I feel the intense appreciation for every moment. So somehow I had to get out of this this half head thing, and I had this really disturbing vision of how it would end, and so basically that's what I did. I ate a plate of spaghetti, not pictured here, then shaved the hair onto the plate, then took the universal antidote, the syrup of Ipecac over there, placed the brain onto the hair, and, you know, vomited the contents of the spaghetti onto the brain, and then what was, and then put it all in this sack, and that was brain sack. So next, I was still into this polarity thing, and so I thought, well, I should go to the North Magnetic Pole. That's where all the compass needles point to, you know. And so I saved my money from cutting mats and working at the library and things like that, and I spent it all going up to the North Magnetic Pole, which is really about as far north in Canada as you can get. It's at Resolute Bay. You have to be very resolute to get there. And so once you're inside of the magnetic pole, your compass just kind of goes around in a circle because there's no, it can't point to anywhere. It just kind of flips around. And the sun was going around, I was there in early May, and the sun kind of circled the sky in a 24 hours, and it went down for a kind of a sunset sunrise, and would just keep going around. So I thought, wow, everything's going around in a circle. I'll go around in a circle too. And so even though it was 30 below, I decided that was the performance that I had to do. And it was one of the early kind of catalysts for I don't know whether it was really out of the body, but I had some kind of sense of connection. And whether it was fantasy or not, it felt very strong that I felt connected to the sort of geomagnetic kind of dissolved into this field momentarily, you know, and then realized I couldn't feel my feet anymore. And so had to get on the boots and try to run back to camp because there was the snowmobile wasn't working. Anyway, not unlike our carousel projector. I came back from that experience somewhat elated, but also really like wondering, like, what am I doing? I'd done this series of very odd things, and I thought, well, I must be searching for something. And I was a pretty existentialist, agnostic, kind of almost atheistic type artist character. And I said, well, okay, maybe I'm searching for God, you know. I was going to art school, the museum school in Boston, and I was talking with the professor. It was this last day, And this girl goes by in her car and says, "Hey, I'm having a party tonight. Why don't you come?" And so we agreed. And this professor picked me up later that night, and he had a bottle. And he said, "This is Kahlua and LSD." And I had never taken acid before, but I just come back from the North Magnetic Pole. My God, I can do anything. So I did drink thereof. And I got to the door of the girl's house, and she said, "What's in the bottle?" And I told her, and so she drank the rest of it. Anyway, I went and sat on a couch because things were getting a little weird. So when I would close my eyes, I was like going through this incredible spiral, this spiralic kind of tunnel inside of my head. And I was like in the dark, but moving toward the light. It was a kind of like the resolution of all these polarities that I'd been playing out through the artwork. That somehow I was just like a spiritual rebirth canal or something. It was kind of a living mother of pearl sort of surface to the tunnel. And I saw that somehow all polarities were connected, and that gray was this sort of magic thing that brought together the opposites. And so that was when I decided to change my name to Gray, and I later painted this sort of attempt to point to this spiralic sort of polar unity experience. So this was part of the miracle of that LSD experience. But the other part was, I called up this girl the next day and I said, "You know, my God, this was an amazing experience for me. How was it for you?" And she said, "Well, you know, I tripped many times. I had to sort of take care of everybody." But I said, "Do you mind if we get together and talk about it and stuff?" And so that was the excuse that I used 27 years ago to get together with my wife. And we're still... She says hi, and I just talked to her before coming over here to talk to you all tonight. So she sends her love from Brooklyn, and my daughter as well, to you all. And so she is like my flesh and blood relationship with God in the daily life, you know, because of that kind of divine love that is possible to share with another human being. It's so weird. Amazing. Anyway, so my prayer or challenge to God was answered. But there were some things I hadn't really completed yet about this polarity thing, you know. I really wanted to get this job at a morgue, both to sort of encounter death and the sort of the ultimate polarity and fear that I had, and also to start to examine the anatomy, because I wanted to make art about consciousness, and I thought, like, how am I going to make art about consciousness unless I really understand a little bit about the body and the box that it comes in? So then I worked at this medical school for several years and prepared bodies for medical students and things. But I got the idea, this is basically what I did, you know, day in, day out. I would prepare bodies by, filling them with phenol, formalin, formaldehyde and stuff, and in the femoral artery there, and next. So then occasionally I would just do drawings from the cadavers and things. So I got the not very smart idea about that I should do performances maybe in the morgue too. This was a piece called Deep Freeze, and I was in there maybe 5-7 minutes or something like that. But there were about 20 to 30 bodies in one of these freezers. And my idea was that I'd go in and I would somehow make contact with some spirit, you know, which I was 21 years old. I didn't really know what I was doing, but I was trying the sensory isolation and then trying to get in touch with these spirits. I didn't really feel that connected, but it was kind of cold. And then I did this piece. It's called Life, Death, and God, where one of my ankles was tied to the ankle of a cadaver and hung up there for a very short time. And then there were these babies in bottles, basically, that were part of the collection that were somewhat disturbing. They were, this is some anencephalic. And I took photographs of about 30 of them. And during about 2 weeks after taking these photographs, I was awakened in the middle of the night, covered with sweat, trembling with fear, and this thing was like hovering in front of me, like a 3D holographic hallucination. And I wasn't on any drugs other than the natural ones, I guess. And it was very frightening to see this thing, and it started speaking in like lots, many voices saying the same thing, which is basically, it's time for you to come with us. And I don't ascribe any badness to this poor unfortunate being, but it had assumed this demonic presence and projected from my shadow, I guess. And I was very frightened of it, and I started saying, the only thing that I knew what to say was, like, divine love is the strongest power. And so there was kind of a confrontation. And eventually, because I felt I was on the precipice of some psychotic break, it dissolved, and it was replaced by a kind of blue light. And this voice said, I'm Mr. Lewis, interplanetary angel, basically, and I'll keep a watch on you for a little while till you're a little more stabilized. And so that was a very benevolent visitation. And these are just a few of the teratological specimens, the thoracophagus twins, and the diencephalic, a dried preparation, and a sirene, which is basically the fused lower limbs with a little kind of flipper on the end, and a cyclops. Amazing that the mythology is finding sources from our biology. So don't worry about this one. Basically, this was a piece I did shortly after that thing where I said I was going to leave my body and touch people that came up to this rooftop. And it's more of the sensory isolation stuff. I was developing some kind of device. This piece was called the Mind Bag, and it had earplugs and this a gasket around the eyes, and then this a bag. And I was going to try to market this, but my wife said she didn't think it would go over very well. So this is... Allison was taking a lot of these photographs, not of the babies, but of many of the other performances. So this was her first appearance in one of the performances in a piece called God's Art. And I was, working in this kind of museum of anatomy, and I felt like this was the one act that brought all these bones to where they were. So I thought it should be honored in a case there. So it's a very small audience for this performance. So this was the more refined model, this thing called the Mindfold. And it was still with this kind of gasket to keep the the blindfold off of your eyes so you could open your eyes and stare into total darkness and then have these earplugs. So it was a poor man's isolation tank kind of thing, you know. But it was really a mask for tripping in. It was a blank screen to project your imagination onto. And so we used it, my wife and I used it to continue our entheogenic voyages. And we sold a bunch of them, actually. We went around to trade shows. I thought it was kind of like the ultimate in minimalism, you know, which was a phase of art. You know, it's like you're basically selling people nothing. They would go and test it, you know, see nothing, hear nothing. And there's a little thing said, unfold the universe within was the thing. And I'd use this poor unity. There's Allison again. This was one of those New Earth expos in the 80s or something, 70s maybe. Next slide. And one performance, there was about 60 people that gathered at this theater, and we handed out 60 mindfolds, and we all just sat there. This piece was called Meditations on Mortality. Allison was in white grease paint. I was in black grease paint. She came in and lit these candles around this big yin-yang symbol, and at a certain point, the music became very cacophonous. There was kind of a Tibetan chant in the background. So next, we got up and stepped outside of the circle of duality and sensuously merged our pigments and became gray. Yeah. Well, this piece was called The Beast, and I think that the Meditations on Mortality piece kind of completed one round of my personal relationship with death, but then I started looking at it from a more world-centric kind of identity and the potential for calamity and catastrophe and nuclear annihilation and everything. There was a film loop of a nuclear bomb blast that was being projected on one wall, and people would come in and they were invited, if they wanted, to get their hands stamped, and some people asked to get their forehead stamped with the number of the beast, 666. I was sitting in a pool of black liquid, and anyway, there was this kind of sculpture that's on a barbed wire or something, and across from me, well, it was some amazing painting. Oh, okay. this was also an acid vision that I had that was very disturbing. Looking at the city from a hilltop and then seeing the nuclear bomb blast go over it. And then as it rose up, this vision of Christ appeared on the cloud. And so this is about a 10.5 by 9.5 foot painting. And nuclear crucifixion. Next. This piece was called The Wasteland. And as audience members came into the performance, there was just this table, and there was a little pamphlet. It said Mr. and Mrs. X were on their way to dinner when they were surprised by a nuclear blast. They arrived at a dinner table in hell to feast on money. And so that's, then we kind of shuffled in, and there was alarm bells going off, and it was very noisy, the bomb blasts and the air raid sirens and everything. And we just kind of shuffled in and started eating money and drinking blood. And then when it became about nuclear midnight, Mrs. X got up and, due to Allison's bulimia, she was very adept at puking. So she spewed the money and blood onto the table and then sort of stuck her fingers down my throat, and I also barfed up the money. And then we kind of shuffled out. And that was Wasteland. So next, oh darn. The nuclear family. Okay. So, yeah. This piece was called Human Race, and I designed this thing. We had steel rods holding it into the concrete there. But this was its test drive. It took all the time to build the thing, you know, and we never got to test it. And so I would start the engine, but the engine wasn't going so well. It would poop out, you know, and then I finally adjusted the engine so and was able to lay down on the thing. And I had a handheld throttle that would engage the clutch of the thing and then start the thing going. And so it started going, and people were they were sitting within like a foot and a half of this thing. And it started going around. I didn't know how the piece would end. You know, it was basically, I thought this is going to be a very boring piece. It would just go around and around and around. Eventually it might get a little noxious, the fumes, you know, from the gasoline engine in an enclosed space. People would leave, get bored. You know, I don't know. So then it went around and it... I hadn't put any brake on it, you know, and it kept going faster and faster, and I hadn't studied physics or anything like this. At any rate, it sheared the steel rods off, and the thing came careening toward the audience, and. Fortunately, I kind of got off of the machine before it hit anybody and sort of stopped it. And then everybody jumped up in wild applause. Oh, that was great. That was wonderful. Except for... oh, yeah. This piece was called Fertile Mother, and it's just basically I'm covered with the... looks like shrimp cocktail or something, and connected with this kind of Grateful Dead character, and it was basically a harvest piece. Anyway, this was a burnt offering. There were three fire sculptures, and this was one of them. I would read a passage about holy fire from a holy book, and it was the Bhagavad Gita, the Holy Bible, and the Quran. And would read a passage from each of them and then set them on fire and sort of in this totem urn. And it burned down to a certain extent, and then I got the ashes and rubbed them on my body. And so this was one of the other fire sculptures. So I would light seven skulls there in front of me and then ignite the skeleton in back. This piece was called Living Cross, and it was done in Chicago. All these were done at different kind of performance spaces, kind of some were funkier than others, but this was a kind of a nice gallery in Chicago, and there were Gregorian chants that go on. The thing was 3 hours, and basically Allison and I just lay there breathing. But it was funny, you know, some people came and they stayed for the whole 3 hours. I don't know, you know. This was called Prayer Wheel, and Allison and I were tethered together, and also to this skeleton, and she was holding a baby doll, because we hadn't had our daughter at that point. And then it was tethered to the prayer wheel, and we... said the mantras, we kind of pulled it around, we went around for maybe 60 rotations, and the whole symbol to me is like, we're this very precious thing, that's why the gold, and, you know, we're like half male, half female, you know, our genes and chromosomes that brought together by mom and dad, you know, and we're between birth and death, so and we're pulling this kind of great engine of spiritual evolution that's symbolized by the prayer wheel. So anyway, that's that piece. So a little bit of close up. Yeah, next slide. This piece was called Goddess, and it was done in Lincoln Center, out of doors, and I did 100 prostrations at the foot of the goddess there, to my goddess Allison, and she was nursing our daughter Zena in the heart there. There was 5,500 apples
in the shape of this goddess. But so anyway, it was about 55 feet long, and after it was displayed for only about an hour, we boxed up the apples and gave them to shelter for homeless families there in New York, and they appreciated it. This piece was called Heartnet, and it was one of the more recent pieces that Allison and I did together, and it was an installation that was at the American Visionary Art Museum. It was up there for a year, and we invited people to write prayers and for their loved ones or for the planet, and to hang them on the net. And so it accumulated thousands and thousands of prayers. There's basically a world map behind there, and so some of the prayers were specific to in the languages of those different areas of the world, and that was kind of interesting. This was like, we made this big rose-filled heart, and this was a stained glass eye, and it was crying these streams of water into a pool down below. Yeah, hard to show. Anyway, the next. There were lots of prayers. Next. And this was part of it. This was kind of a global child that looked like it had kind of crawled out of this pool, sort of pointing to a hopeful future for the planet, perhaps. A rebirth. And then up at the top, there was this kind of Buddha figure. Anyway, next. This is kind of funny. This is just a few examples of how my work has kind of found its way into... Hello? Found its way into the psychedelic world. There's been a number of raves. I was just talking with somebody who said that they saw my work used in some rave flyers like long ago and whatnot. If anybody happens to see any, I know there's not much that one can do about it, but I like to collect them. So if you think of it, grab an extra one for me, and send it to me if you ever get a chance to. This was something I did for High Times. They invited me to do the poster for the Cannabis Cup. That's something they do every year, you know, determining the best pot in the world. Which is kind of fun to do, maybe once. And they invited Allison and I to be celebrity judges there. And this poster was my sort of conception of a cannabis goddess, Cannabia. And here we painted a beautiful dancer named Jodea, and she presided over the events that year. Now, I think that this one is kind of an example of how getting stoned sometimes helps one to conceive of things. But this is my heretical picture of Adam and Eve. And here we've got numerous psychedelic plants down here. I think I put iboga and stuff there, and lots of grass. They've got the psilocybin and also the fly agaric mushroom. There's a few other plants down on the ground, some mushrooms growing out of turds and things like that back in the background. But then this is the kind of sense of the serpent being the kundalini, kind of seducing this dawn human into this self-awareness, which kind of felt like a fall because it was falling out of ignorance, you know, just the kind of being subsumed in nature. Now there was this awareness, of this knowledge of good and evil, life and death, you know, the polarities started to kick in, and the rational mind started to kick in when this tree of knowledge of good and evil and things. Anyway, so... But the painting had started out that I was, that Allison and I were this Adam and Eve-like figure, and the snakes were in a totally different position. And I wasn't liking it for some reason. It just didn't seem right. And so then I got stoned and looked at it again and thought, oh my God, yes, of course. So next thing. So it had to be this kind of dawn human. That was what would be right if you're talking about, you know, the first humans. So anyway. And that was also kind of a, you know, my bow to Terence, the stoned monkey theory of evolution, you know. So anyway, next, and this is also dedicated to Terence because it was like the spokes monkey that this cornucopia of language is extruding out of this sort of hyper-dimensional elf figure is whispering sweet everythings into his ear. Good old Dr. Hoffman. So that it was like seeing a Buddha or something to see him. I don't know. It was a very profound moment to spot Dr. Hoffman, you know, somebody who'd made such an impact on your life. So he was so sweet. And I made a kind of a funny portrait of him. I always thought of acid as alchemical angel tears. And then this little demon always wants to pull away at it. So, next. And then some friend of mine, unbeknownst to me, used my art for a blotter acid. And so this is one of evidently a number of blotters that have my artwork on them now. But I know that the purple Jesus was good. this is a painting of DMT. I was doing it for Rick Strassman for the cover of the book, The DMT, The Spirit Molecule, but it wasn't able to finish it on time. But he liked the other piece probably better for that. But he owns this now. So this is the Sacred Mirrors. It was a series of works. It took me about 10 years to realize. And there's 21 Sacred Mirrors. They go through kind of body, mind, spirit sections. They're about 6 foot tall figures and 10.5 foot high frames by about 5 feet. And next slide. The frames, they were fairly elaborately sculpted. My wife and I sculpted them in our basement. We cast 21 of these frames, massive frames. And then we have a little stained glass eye of God up there. And you can see it's got a kind of a big bang here, or this is the beginning, and then it kind of spreads out. On the one side, there's like cosmic and biological evolution, the DNA chain that goes up from blue-green algae all the way up to the higher mammals. And over here, there's kind of like the chimp, and then the dawn human, and then the Homo sapiens kind of head. And then out of the two hemispheres of the brain, there's these kind of caduceus-like snakes that go through technological evolution. So next. So anyway, just close up. So little one unicellular things coming out from that side. And then up to the higher mammals. This just to give you an idea of the detail. And then up at the top here, you've got this polarity thing still going on. You know, the male side and the female side. And then the fetus and the death, birth and death. And then the life paths and wisdom paths up above. And this kind of focal point of the eye of God or the eye of transcendence that's perhaps the source or the reason for cosmic evolution, you know, for the universe to become aware of itself. So the sacred mirrors themselves, that first one was an actual mirror. You know, I didn't even talk about that one. But anyway, it's sandblasted with the periodic table of the elements. But this one is just an oil painting of a skeleton. Maybe most everybody's seen this stuff. So they're very detailed oil paintings, you know.
And it was my study of anatomy, you know. And but they're kind of like standing impossibly facing you. And the idea is to stand in front of it and you can do the next one. That's the nervous system. Cardiovascular system. The idea is to look at the painting and see it as a reflection of yourself, and you do get an odd resonance, you know, like, oh my God, you know, look at my guts, or look at my blood system and various kinds of things. If you kind of allow your mind to relax and look at the thing, you can really get a sense of seeing into these different levels of yourself. So the viscera, and of course these are all full figures and things. This is the muscle system, and with a little view of the fetus there. And then, but once you get skin onto the figure, then you're into this kind of socio-political, what I think of as the realm of the mind, you know, where you're differentiating this is this, this is that, you know. That's why I call this kind of the mind level. But in the context of the sacred mirrors, it's also inviting people to see themselves reflected in others, you know. So it goes through different races and genders. And then it moves into this kind of more metaphysical or spiritualized anatomy, and where you have the acupuncture meridians and points and the chakras and the auras and things like that. And I kind of overlaid the Kabbalistic tree keyed to the figure, this kind of Adam Kadmon figure, and then the system of the chakras, because they have a similar kind of material to spiritual hierarchy, you know. And so this one's called the psychic energy system, and I painted it like 22 years ago, and it was really important for my work because it kind of a lot of work came out of this. Spiritual energy system, this is just a kind of a progressive dissolving of this physical body and merging with the environment. So, and then this universal mind lattice that was my depiction of a high dose LSD experience that my wife and I had wearing our blindfolds and lying in bed. And it was so weird, but it was like you were one of these fountains and drains of light. It was kind of like a cell you were. And you were connected infinitely in all directions with every other being and thing in the universe. And they also were one of these sort of fountains and drains of light. The light itself was love. It's love energy that was binding every other being and thing in the universe together. And it felt more real than, you know, like standing here. And it seemed like a place that one would return to after death, or that was always going on. But it was just this other, more real dimension. I don't know, it's very difficult to describe. It was outside of time somehow. And at any rate, when I came back, took off the mindfold, looked at Allison, and I said, oh my God, it was the most incredible space. You were there, everyone was there, everything was there. And she said, oh, I know. And it looked like this. And she started drawing it, and it was exactly the same space. And that kind of freaked me out. Because it was like this totally inner dimension, transpersonal experience that she was experiencing the same place at the same time. And so that kind of catalyzed me even further into looking at the nature of consciousness and wanting to depict this. I wanted to go through the physical body and the grounding in this socio-political realm and all the stuff that we accept and know is real, you know, and then bring viewers to this possibility. you know, which felt very real to me. So, and then after that, what do you do? You know, so it was to point to this core of emptiness and clarity, the voidness that is spoken of, not the voidness that Anne was talking about earlier, as devoid of all meaning, as a world devoid of all meaning, but a voidness, a kind of a cosmic voidness that is pregnant with everything, you know, at all the world's great religions basically point to a realm beyond this kind of astral or subtle realm where God is unmanifest, completely transcendent, and not visualizable, and things like that. But I couldn't just do an empty canvas that had been done by the minimalists, so I used this kind of symbols of the elements influenced by the Tibetans, because I think the Tibetans had such a great understanding of voidness and clear light. And then use the body or the sense of self kind of reduced to this shimmering essence, and the symbol of the Kala Chakra, which is basically time wheel, and it's also a symbol of the 84,000 teachings of the Buddha and the transmutation of the elements by the principle of shunyata, or the emptiness. So anyway, that's that. And that spacious void is also seen to be manifesting this incredible infinite compassion that's symbolized by various Buddhist deities, but here by the Buddha of active compassion, Avalokitesvara, as named, or Chenrezig, has got a lot of different names, and sometimes it switches sexes if it goes from one country to another. But it's basically many, many arms, infinite arms really, but they call it thousand arms, of Avalokitesvara, with an eye of unobstructed vision in each palm. And so, here's the 11-headed, Avalokitesvara, the Buddha of active compassion. So it's reaching out to help the suffering world. Anyway, next. It's sort of our Western Bodhisattva, a vision of the resurrected Christ. Try and keep going here. Sophia, and, you know, I guess there's some archetypes of Sophia, but I wanted to point to this feminine aspect of the transcendent, and had a vision of kind of like Allison or something modeled on Allison, then that was made out of eyes, just all over, all seeing, you know, and the whole symbol of the eyes and eye fields, I think, you know, when you're seeing it, when you're tripping, is like basically it's a symbol of infinite awareness. You know, if an eye is a symbol of awareness, then if you infinitize it, then it's kind of symbolic of that expanded or infinite awareness. So this is Allison did a kind of a guest appearance on this painting. These are her symbols that are that I have seen floating on her skin, you know, just in a tripping state. And so this is this sort of global child, you know, the child that's children being born today, you know, with this potential of a global consciousness. So, anyway, the last piece in the Sacred Mirror series, the 21st Sacred Mirror, is this piece called Spiritual World, and it's another actual mirror, and you see yourself reflected in it, but there, in the space of the heart, it's got this illuminated sun. So, next. And, of course, for those very dense, I did inscribe the name into this sun, you know, so it's basically just to say that, you know, you, your surroundings, everything is sacred, you know, and so then we have this idea of building a chapel that's based around the sacred mirrors, and so these are a few, you know, a couple of conceptions of what that will look like. There will be these guardian pillars, the next
thing. And this is just like somebody standing inside of this place. We want to build this place, actually. You know, we've got the paintings, and I've got lots of renderings and things of this space. So, you know, we created this 501c3 nonprofit to create a space for this. And I've got a little fly through that we're going to show after I run through these things, a little 1 minute animation about it. So, and a number of these pieces, people, like the guy who owns this, said he'd donate it back if we were able to build this place and stuff. So this is praying, and it points to a core of light that's inside and that is basically the source of all the different world religions. Of course, you know, kissing, and it's looking at this very mortal, flesh connection, but then it's also trying to point beyond that. And I use this kind of golden band of light and the golden flames as a symbol of consciousness. You know, you have to resort to symbols if you want to talk about consciousness, because it has no shape or smell or color or anything like that. So, calculating. Then I've used this golden let's see, this is sending out little vortices of light to alert other souls that hey, check it out, you know. Maybe this could be you and your parents. Next. And then this is a tantra. This has got the kind of the meniscus or the surface tension of the skin that's connecting them. And there's this kind of Mobius sphere or egg that's connected at the heart, and the rest of the skin's kind of dissolved into this blue ocean of light.
Well, I'm sorry to have to break in here, but Alex's talk goes on for about another hour, and the size of this podcast file is already a lot larger than I like to see. If you've been following this talk on Alex's website, I'm sure you'll continue on your own and explore the rest of the images that he was talking about or talks about in this talk, and as well as some of the great multimedia sections of his site. There's some really cool stuff out there on both his and Allison's sites. Also, I've been told that Alex and Allison have just produced an exciting new video presentation of his work with a focus on their vision for the Chapel of Sacred Mirrors. So if you get a chance to stop by his gallery in New York, be sure to ask where it's showing and perhaps get it shown in your area. I haven't seen it myself, but my friends tell me it's not to be missed. And, of course, if you're a Tool fan, you already know what a magic Alex can do when he brings his work to life in a video. And, hey, if you can only even spare $25 or so, it'd be very cool of you to make a donation to the Chapel of Sacred Mirrors project and become a little mini patron of the arts yourself. I know the tribe would appreciate it. Well, that's it for today, and I want to thank you again to Alex Gray for his excellent presentation, and of course to John Hanna for producing the Mind States conferences and for letting us podcast them. Kevin Whitesides, if you hadn't been there with your recorder in Jamaica, we wouldn't have heard Alex today, so thanks again for the recording. And all of you out there in cyberdelic space, hey, thanks for being with us today here in the Psychedelic Salon. Jacques Cordell and Wells, better known as Chateau Hayuk, thanks as always for the use of your music here in the Psychedelic Salon. And for now, this is Lorenzo, signing off from cyberdelic space. Be well, my friends.